With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast hosted by your good friends Andrew Levins and Siobhan Coombs. My name is Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
As mentioned in the intro that I just did very, very goodly. Every week on Serious Issues, we review all of last week's comics that came out. And we got all those comics from where, Siobhan?
The bin outside your house.
Of Hungry Jack's on George Street, Sydney.
No, we got them at the King's Comics, the best comic book store in the world.
If you want to read any of the comics we talk about on the show, you can find them all at King's Comics in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street, Sydney, or kingscomics.com. There's sales galore on at the moment. Warehouse finds.
Yep.
It's off the hook on that website.
It's crazy. It's a crazy website.
And this is a crazy episode because it is the end of a four-day long weekend that we have in Australia. Good Friday, Easter Saturday, Easter Sunday, Easter Monday.
I'm full of chocolate.
Yeah, me too. A lot of chocolate went down. I made a big point of not letting my kids eat chocolate, but I did not set the same rules for myself. Because one should not live by example. I'm the Trunchbull.
Yeah, from Matilda. Yeah, she always eats chocolates. Am I thinking of that correctly? Anyway,
not a comic. Why would we know anything about that? Siobhan shrugged, which is not helpful for everyone listening. It's hard on long weekends trying to avoid family so you can read comics. But luckily for us, it was a slightly smaller week. Coming up on this show, we're going to be reviewing the finale of Dark Knight's Metal, the latest from the Doomsday Clock series and the 50th issue of Saga. Before we do that, we got to do First Things First, in which we review all of the number ones that came out last week. And we're going to kick things off with the latest from DC's Young Animal imprint. And this is the return to the series and world of Mother Panic, written by Jody Houser. Returning to this series, she's now in its second year. And so they've renumbered it, and it's now called Mother Panic Gotham AD. It features a new art team of Ibrahim Mustafa on art, and I think colors are by
Jordan Boyd. Oh, and Marissa Louise.
There you go. So a new creative team, but definitely still fitting into the style of what this fairly kind of noir, like neo noir tinged Gotham, but with like quite sketchy kind of dark inks. The neo noir is pretty much entirely just comes from Mother Panic's costume herself. It's a great costume.
It's such a good costume. It still looks so good.
So this was like the kind of like the most superhero-like comic of the Young Animal imprint, especially since it's set in Gotham and features Batman and features Mother Panic interacting with kind of, you know, regular Gotham characters, although it's been made clear that this is not the same Gotham that we are seeing in the regular DC Universe comics. In this one, we learn a bit more about why Gotham is the way it is In fact, there's this brilliant kind of back matter in which we learn a little bit more about like the kind of main antagonist of this series and her role in making Gotham seemingly crime-free. And so there's this kind of like advertisement for the new Gotham City, which, you know, isn't a nightmare urban hellscape of crime and drugs and poverty. Instead of it's a, you know, crime sprees and serial killers are a thing of the past, and Gotham is now the ultimate destination for anyone looking for a safe, clean and living experience. But that means that the majority of bad guys that are on Mother Panic's radar are like one percenters. We kind of meet her latest protagonist in this first issue.
I really like this.
Yeah, me too.
Good. Continues to be a good series.
This was our favorite young animal book behind Shade the Changing Girl. Mm-hmm. I think Jodie Hauser as a writer really, really kind of, you know, explored what makes this character interesting pretty quickly in the first series, and it continues that in this first issue.
I like this future Gotham. I like the sad, slightly demented but harmless Joker.
Yeah, totally. And it looks like we're going to get Catwoman in the next issue.
Mm-hmm,
Mother Panic is also training like a young Liege, or Robin of her own, if you will, who stabs someone in a supermarket.
Yep.
There's a lot to love about this series.
Yeah, I like this a lot. Three Houses doing a really good job with this character. I like it a lot.
And I think Ibrahim Mustafa is a great choice of artist for this new arc. Because that was the kind of, as far as I think there were three different artists over the course of the 12 issues that first run, so it'd be good to see a more the same artist for the entire run on this time around. Let's move over to Valiant now, Siobhan, for Shadow Man number one. Shadow Man, a character that I've definitely read in many books before. I don't know what Shadow Man's power set is or what number of Shadow Men he is. It's like a phantom thing. Like you die and then your son becomes Shadow Man. I'd probably not.
I don't think that's how phantom worked. Weirdly, I feel like phantom is like a little bit racist, but I haven't read it in a long time, so maybe it's not anymore.
I've just seen the Billy Zane movie.
Yeah,
good fun.
It's a good movie.
Shadow Man has a new number one out through Valiant now, and it is written by Andy Diggle with art by Steven Segovia. And Siobhan, you want to say this name at the same time as me, our favorite colorist in the game.
Ulysses Areola.
Ulysses Areola, the best name in comics. Many times awarded best name in comics. So this
Eyes
is
award winning name.
Yes. this is a return, the character of Shadow Man returning to Earth, I guess.
Yeah, he's been in hell, and then he is not anymore for reasons that aren't fully explained. But his girlfriend's been holding it down,
and for 5 years, she's been like practicing spells and discovering the dark arts, waiting for.
She's a mambo.
She's a mambo, but she's not punk mambo.
No, who turns out might not actually be a mambo.
this was confusing, but I feel like if I gave this more of a chance with the ongoing issues, I'd probably get invested in the story.
Yeah, totally.
But I don't think it was anywhere near as new reader friendly as recent Valiant number ones have been lately.
Yeah, agreed. This one did have more like assumed knowledge, but I kind of liked it in spite of that, and in spite of not really knowing anything about it. So it was cool.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good to kind of this new witchcraft practicing mambo wife, ex girlfriend, estranged girlfriend. It was a pretty compelling character, it's going to be interesting seeing. Shouts to Nate making snacks in the background of your house.
Yeah, I know.
Is he gonna start cooking a steak today?
Are you planning to cook any steaks?
That was my favorite We won a podcasting award for sound effects when he cooked a steak on an episode of Serious Issues in the past. I think this is Andy Diggle's first book for Valiant, so I would have thought it would have been more. I could be very wrong. I frequently am.
You just said that.
I thought it would have been a bit more kind of explaining. I don't even know what Shadow Man's power set is. Can he talk to the dead or something? Is that
and then
it?
He has a big scythe. So I guess superpower death powers. I feel like it doesn't really matter what his powers are. Death stuff.
Yeah, I know. Totally. I don't know anything about this character after reading his number one.
Yeah, it wasn't like a really clean introduction to the character or anything like that.
Yep. I think this is Andy Diggle's first comic for Valiant.
There you go.
Not wrong this time, everybody. Although I still probably am. Let's move over to Marvel right now for Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider number one, which is a one-shot that ties into the Damnation event. It was written by Christopher Sabella and art by Phil Noto.
I'm calligraphy. Glad this is just a one-shot.
Yeah, by Travis Lanham. I liked Phil Noto's art. I bet he wished the script he was given was better, because not a lot happens.
I also feel like Phil Noto is not the person that I would choose to draw a comic that relies on, like, vehicles and speed.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, he's like great at just drawing handsome men talking.
Yes.
but yeah, action is not quite his forte. Johnny Blaze at the end of the last issue of Damnation, the event which is like the Doctor Strange resurrecting Las Vegas and then opening a hell casino with Mephisto on Earth. At the end of the last issue, Ghost Rider was sent to hell, and this is him in hell, but he's separated from the demon. So it's Johnny Blaze as himself, and then there's like the Ghost Rider demon, both of them riding motorbikes through hell. And at the end of this, Johnny Blaze becomes the king of hell or something.
I found this really tough to get through, but it was worth the final panel where he has a little fiery ghost crown on.
That was pretty cute.
You win me.
But yeah, this is a case of like something that should be really, really fun, but isn't.
Yeah, and it was super boring.
So, I guess a thumbs down for this one.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Johnny Blaze.
Thankfully, just a one shot that doesn't tie into that isn't going to be. I, as it was like going towards the end, I was like dreading those three words "to be continued" showing up, but luckily for us, they didn't. Instead, we get "to be concluded," continued in Damnation. So the events of this will happen in the next Damnation issue, which we'll be reviewing here in a couple weeks' time. Image put out a new number one this week through their Top Cow imprint. Don't worry, I don't think you read this. It's Cyberforce issue number one. Last week when I was talking about it coming back, I think I said it was a Rob Liefeld comic. I was wrong. It was a Mark Silvestri creation in the 90s. But this is a revamp of it, written by Matt Hawkins and Brian Hill, with art by Attilio Rojo. Letters by Troy Pateri. Enjoyed
the guys who do like Postal and stuff, right?
That's right, yes. And I really enjoyed the art on this. I thought it was great seeing them move away from like the typical super 90s character designs and action stuff. It was actually like pretty good, solid art. But story-wise, it's like a father gets injured and loses an arm. So his daughter, who is in a wheelchair, like basically like makes an arrangement with the government for him to get like cybernetic arms. So essentially he has three arms now, but one of them is a double arm.
Cool. What do you mean a double arm?
At one point he kind of says it's like this weird like mess of metal as an arm. Like maybe there are two arms in there, I don't know.
But is there another arm coming out of the arm, or is it like no, it's just one arm attached onto his body?
At one point he says, "I have three arms," but he clearly has two. So Maybe the artist misread, I don't know.
Maybe the third arm is his dick.
Oh, that's a great name for this episode. And then the deal that's kind of like revealed at the end is that she has also given her body to the government, and now she has cybernetic legs too. So now the government own both her father and herself.
Cool. I find that so hilarious.
I don't need to read another issue of this, but if you were looking for a gritty Top Cow cybernetic action book, this wouldn't be that disappointing. But that's really something that I'm looking for. So. I'm going to take it you didn't read Adventure Time BMO Bonanza number one.
No, I didn't.
This is a new Adventure Time special out through Kaboom's comics, who do all of the Adventure Time comics, and we have basically like a little, almost like an annual style, big, thick, I think it's like $10 too. No, $7.99. That's good. Normally they charge $10 for these. Has lots of indie artists doing cute little stories set in the Adventure Time world featuring that cute little Game Boy dude, BMO. A lot of these were just kind of very twee, simple cartooning, adventure stories. And the one I liked most was definitely that too. But I just want to shout out Boya Sun. Have you heard of that name before?
No.
Boya Sun, whoever they are, wrote a really, really gorgeous and cute kind of BMO adventure featuring Finn and Jake. And Finn has a cold and constantly has like boogers running out of his nose and shit.
Nice.
That appealed to me. Really great watercolors. That was easily my favorite artist on this pretty skippable one shot. But if you are a big fan of the character, I'm sure you'll find more to love about it than I did.
Cool.
Over to Black Mask now for Breathless issue one.
Yes.
Which features a bloodied asthma puffer on the front, an inhaler.
Oh, you had a different cover to me. I had a lady.
A lady with a gun. That's way more excited. Look at this. I got a bloodied puffer.
I think that might be more iconic.
Yeah, definitely. Why don't you tell everybody what this book is about, Siobhan?
Oh, man. Okay. So this is written by Pat Chan, with art by Renzo Rodriguez, colors by Mara Jane Carpenter, letters by Jim Campbell. This is about a lady who works in, like, a science place cutting up cryptids. A lab.
Cutting up
where they
monsters.
Cut up cryptids.
And
then she, like, she has really bad asthma, and then she cuts one open or it, like, explodes on her, and then she breathes it in, and then her asthma's cured. And I can imagine there will be no negative consequences to come that we haven't seen yet.
Her lungs look like a butt.
They do. Sexy lungs.
Yeah. If you ever want to see some butt lungs, definitely pick up this comic.
I quite liked this.
After her asthma is cured, the company that she works for leaks that they have cured asthma.
Because her parts. Like idiot lab assistant is like, "Lol, I just cured asthma on Twitter."
Yeah, but she only has 12 followers or something like that. So she's like, "What's the harm?" But the comic ends with an alien slicing and dicing everyone else in the lab except the main character and her mm-hmm. goofy assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to read another issue of this.
I'm going to give it one more issue.
It was written by Pat Chan, did we say already? You already gave a shout mm-hmm. out to the creative team. Black Mask, pretty up and down when it comes to making books that are either my thing or not my thing. I think this is definitely in the... I think it's a good start for this creative team, but if I see their names on stuff in the future, I'll look at that instead of seeing where this book goes, because I think this is a case of too much going on
not
in one story. Also,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. They did pack a lot in.
So much.
To that first issue.
Unfortunate... Oh, really? Wow. Okay, I have like
number
five
one.
More.
Titan
Comics. Titan Comics this week put out a new European translation through their Statics Press imprint, written and drawn by someone called Elgo, translated by Mark Bourbon Crook. This story is called Factory. Series is called Factory. It's like a dystopian future. And there is like a Lord Guko who creates like precogs, so like these weird beings that I guess can see into the future,
like Minority Report.
I guess, you know, like help him rule as Lord, he creates these disgusting creatures. This is a very, very disgusting looking book, by the way. You could, on any page, you see like just like disgusting things ripping other disgusting looking things apart.
Is it at least pretty?
No, it's gross. it's very good art, but it's gross art. He makes these like precogs, and all the while the precogs basically let him know that there is like a pig that's coming to kill him, and so we see like this pig adventurer who is like teaming up with a talking monkey to walk through this like barren wasteland. It's a really crazy, extremely European, weird book, featuring lots of like big, gross things being eaten by monsters. Not necessarily my thing.
Yeah, sounds not that cool.
I don't know if that sounds moderately interesting to you. I would give a flick through. I think Static Press, their track record of choosing books to be translated is pretty decent. So, even though this is not for me, it probably is a pretty cool story. And maybe if it was in its original, where do you reckon Elgo is from? We'll never
know. Finland. No.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Denmark.
No. Okay, all right, Denmark. Shouts to Elgo and Denmark. I read an IDW book this week, Goosebumps, Download and Die.
I can't believe you read that.
Oh, man. I said that to myself quite a few times this week. written by Jen Vaughan with art by Michelle Wong and colors by Triona Tree Farrell. This is a book about three girls at school who love working in the computer lab, but there are some bullies that hog the computer lab all the time and they break one of the girls' phones. So then a mysterious evil phone with a skull in it shows up at her house and she starts using it. And whenever she like puts like emojis of like people throwing up on pictures of the people she doesn't like, then they get sick and like things happen because of the phone. And like that weird ventriloquist, that weird ventriloquist character, like doll that was like in one of the stories of the Goosebumps books that we read growing up.
Yeah.
You know, like he's like, yeah.
Yeah, he's called like character. Slappy or something.
Yeah. And he's a character in this. And she has a dream that he's in and she's like falling down a river. And he shows up and he's like, falling in love, huh? Maybe you'll survive if you give me the phone. So I don't.
What?
And then they wake up from the dream and one of the girl's hair's been chopped. Like a few locks, like not much hair. Like it's barely alarming. And someone has left a note that says, I want the phone. So
what?
I don't know. It's called Download or Die. It's about a phone.
Is anything downloaded at any point?
No, not many downloads happen.
Is it written by R.L. Stine? Or?
No, it's written by Jen Vaughan.
Right. Well.
This is IDW's second Goosebumps miniseries, and I think I read the first issue of the last one too, and it was about as silly as this is. Maybe if I was like 11 and like afraid of phones, this would be appealing.
I mean, I'm afraid of phones, but for entirely different reasons.
Name one reason why you're afraid of phones.
Because of data theft.
Maybe that'll happen in issue two. Everyone's data gets thieved by a ventriloquist doll. I read a comic this week called Bruce Lee, The Walk of the Dragon.
You know what? I looked at that and I went, nah, I'm not reading that.
This came out through Darby Pop Publishing. And would you believe it? This is the first ever comic I've read published by Darby Pop Publishing.
I've never heard of them before.
The best thing about this book is that it is the second of this Bruce Lee comic. And I thought this was going to be like a stock standard Bruce Lee like martial arts comic. But no, the recap page. just the opening four words, Bruce Lee never died, and he hasn't aged. But he has no idea who he is, what's happened in the world in the past 40 plus years, or why so many thugs want a piece of him. With the help of a fly BFF from the 70s and a pair of precocious teens, Bruce has bested both an enigmatic villain and his very own conscience.
What?
So this is like, what if Bruce Lee was Austin Powers?
Yeah.
And this, he like stops a mugging from happening and then is in like a cosplay fight between someone dressed as Chuck Norris and himself.
Yeah. I feel very depressed by this. This feels very disrespectful to the legacy of Bruce Lee.
But it was created by someone.
Rest in peace.
This series was created by Shannon Lee. And I'm Googling right now to see if Shannon Lee is. Yep, she's the daughter of Bruce Lee.
Good Lord. Well.
So hopefully, when we pass on, our children will write a comic about us
where we
never
fight
dying.
Each other.
Perfect. So look forward to that 60 years from now. The last number one I'm going to mention is called Battle Cats. I'm going to show you this cool cover, Siobhan. And I was lucky enough to get two issues of Battle Cats this week. I don't know why, but both one and two shipped this week. It's written by Mark London, art by Andy King, and colors by Alejandro Giraldo. And this is a high fantasy book in which all of the fantasy archetypes are played by sexy cats. Sexy, standing upright. Yeah, I know. You would love this, I think. Because it had everything I hate about fantasy with my least favorite animal.
And they have boobs.
They have boobs and pecs and glutes. And axes. It's like a phenomenally gory fantasy comic with cats. Like at one point there is a cat with big red glowing eyes standing atop of skulls. Like a big mountain of skulls. So nice. If that's something that's missing from your life, baby, Battle Cats is for you. Came out through a publisher called Mad Cave. How do you think they came to the conclusion that they should name their company Mad Cave?
They're like, all right, we like caves. And we're all pretty crazy.
Well, what do you reckon they were just like,
I bet you they're a gaming company or something.
Well, they were
like a
what if they're like
gaming.
In a mad cave. Like they were just, you know, this is a mad cave. Oh. Let's name our comics publishing
mad.
Company after it. Yeah. So that's the end of this issue of edition of First Things First. In case you could tell from our fairly tired voices, it was a rough week of First Things First.
Yeah, goodness.
Let's
I'm
see
so sorry
if the
you
week
read all
improved.
Those.
I never am.
You should stop doing it.
I'm never sorry enough because I keep doing it again and again. Now, usually we would play this next game with a beautiful three-sided die that is at the King's Comics office, but we are recording this from the comfort of our own homes over Skype. So I've got the trusty six-sided die here, and we're going to play a game called Roll the Dice to see if we review Image, Marvel, or DC next. And 1 to 2 is Image, 3 to 4 is Marvel, 5 to 6 is DC. And so 6 first, so DC, and then 3, so Marvel. So DC, Marvel, then Image. And we're going to kick off with a review of Dark Knight's Metal, issue number 6. What's that, Siobhan? Did you just get really, really awake and perky all of a sudden, talking about your favorite comic series ever published? This is written by Scott Snyder, with art by Greg Capullo, and inks and colors by Jonathan Glapion and FCO Placentia.
I would really struggle to try and explain what happened in this comic to anyone.
I'll tell you. Too damn much happened.
They had a tuxedo party at the end.
Yes, they did. And they did that funny thing that I thought only Bendis events did, where they just spend the next... a massive part of the book is just all the characters seeing the future. And it's just like screenshots of upcoming DC titles. Mm-hmm, that's a bullshit Marvel trick that I hated when they did, and I don't hate it any less when it's done here.
Yeah, thanks a lot, DC.
There's a fun way to tease things, and I don't think that's a fun way to tease things.
No, nothing about this was fun.
I think it tried so hard to be fun, but I think it wasn't our kind of fun.
No.
There
are... It should have been. On paper,
there are so many.
It's something that should appeal to me.
There are so many massive things that happen in this issue, but because it's just one big, ridiculous thing happening after the other, it there's no weight to any of them happening, and it's just... There's a randomness to this.
Yeah.
Like it feels like it was like a challenge where Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo like stayed up one night like just fucking smashing energy drinks and writing and mm-hmm. drawing a comic page by page.
Mm-hmm.
So when Plastic Man finally emerges from his egg, it's so weird. Like there's no real explanation that he was in an egg because he was worried about his form. So he was just in an egg that he made people carry around him in. I don't know. And then so when he finally does emerge, he becomes like this weird like octopus dinosaur hand, but then he still has like all his fingers pretending to be like power tools. Yeah.
I have so little like energy to talk about this. It's exhausting. The whole thing from start to finish is like, oh god, and then like they're all fighting a big hawk monster, and then they're wearing special armor, and then Batman and the Joker team up, and then blah,
which is
blah,
just
blah, 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 blah.
So yeah, in order to take down the merge of like the evil Batman and the evil Joker, who are like kind of like the same being, the kind of the main evil Batman in this story, Batman teams up with the Joker, because that's the only thing that the Batman Who Laughs wouldn't be able to predict. But that just betrays everything about Batman. And I don't think, like, if it was an event that led up to this being the only big thing that happens as like in the final fight, but it's like it takes place over like one page, and then you turn the page again and some other insanely crazy bullshit thing is happening, which in itself sounds fun and appealing, but for me I agree with you, it's pretty exhausting.
And then they have a weird tuxedo party, which Alfred guessed all of their sizes and tailored them suits.
I would like love an issue of Alfred just sitting alone in the Batcave making suits.
And being like, what size do you think Hal Jordan is?
Yeah. Man, they should remake Phantom Thread and tuck the main character, Woodcock, whatever his name is Alfred, and then all the other characters are like DC characters. Do you reckon P.T. Anderson would be down for that? Is
cool.
Oh, you'd love it. It's about a dressmaker in London in like the at the turn of the 19th century. The finale of this has Alfred playing drums for a band featuring John and Damien playing bass and guitar.
Yeah, like everything about this exhausts me. Everything about this.
But I should like that, and I don't, and I don't know why. This comic makes me feel weird.
It makes me feel terrible. It makes me feel sad and annoyed.
Really? That bad?
This issue, yes.
It's a bummer.
With the Wonder Woman's
knowing
ugly dress.
That was especially weird. Especially because, for the most part, like the art in that final scene was pretty good because it's Mikael Janin. And, who else is
it's
up?
Like
there's
the
a
art
few,
is good, but the aesthetics are terrible.
The finale, the coda, is Michael Janin, Alvaro Martinez, and Raul Fernandez. So it's kind of like some of the best Batman and Detective Comics artists coming together for that finale. Snyder is clearly proud of this. It's like his like swan song to his work with Capullo, which he started when the DC New 52 launched. It's just a bummer that we didn't enjoy it as much as he did writing it, but I'm sure he has plenty of fans that did. But you know, if you are a listener of this podcast, you'll know that it's not quite our cup of tea. That's a really bad Wonder Woman dress. That sucks.
She looks
especially like I normally champion when someone draws Wonder Woman quite masculine, but she literally looks like Bruce Wayne put a dress on in that final page.
Like, the worst thing is it's an ugly dress, and it just looks like a costume. Everyone else is wearing like suits. Why isn't she in a tuxedo?
Yeah,
she and Hawkgirl are the only people not in tuxedos.
That's really true. Maybe it's all Alfred's fault, but I reckon Alfred
would
be secretly great at making dresses.
Yeah, I think he would have impeccable taste. Well,
weird.
Boo.
So that is the end of Dark Knight's Metal. But it's only the fourth issue of Doomsday Clock, which is another enormous big DC event happening right now, which is the kind of merging of the Watchmen universe with the DC universe, written by Geoff Johns with art by fucking good old... What's his face? Gary Frank. Gary Frank, and colors by Brad Anderson. Good old what's his face. I've been pretty cold on this series. I think it's been drawn incredibly well, but I just kind of didn't really see the point to it. But that said, I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, I enjoyed this issue until Ozymandias showed up, and I was like, I wish that this was even about like other characters in the Watchmen universe. I feel like I would be enjoying it more because of the bits that I liked, like, all the stuff about this new Rorschach and stuff. That was cool. He was like a peripheral character, but like he wasn't just Ozymandias. And now
totally. No,
it sort of annoys me. I got annoyed when I got brought back to the plot.
Yeah. But that said, this event wouldn't exist if it was like, oh, this is just like background characters from the initial Watchmen series making their way to the DC universe. Like, it's the guy from the taxi, remember? He's in the DC universe now.
It's the guy from the photo. Vendor?
Yeah, remember the guy from the guy in the photo of the Minutemen with the wings on his back? He's in the DC universe now. That was a really, really clever choice, though, using Mothman as a character from the Watchmen universe that like quite helped shape this character who's now becoming, you know, the character that was inspired to become the new Rorschach, and having him almost trained by someone who was a part of Rorschach's world before Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias fucked it all up was a quite a clever bit of storytelling. I also really, for the first time ever in this series, I really enjoyed the use of having Batman and, like, you know, DC characters be a part of it, because they were in this we see Batman basically put on a costume, which is my favorite thing about Batman, like the Batman the Master of Disguise. What's his he's like criminal,
isn't it Matches Malone?
So great. But in this one, he disguised himself as a criminal psychologist and interviews this new Rorschach while he's imprisoned, and I liked that he's like, you know, he's almost like the watcher in this, just kind of observing things as they happen instead of meddling and letting them happen. Look, Gary Frank's artwork is amazing, and I think, you know, if this is going to be like, you know, we're going to get three or four issues of this a year, so be it. It's worth it just to see Gary Frank not joined by a bunch of fill-in artists to help him meet a deadline.
Yeah, I would rather get this slowly and drawn nicely than quickly and terribly, but I would rather see Gary Frank doing like pretty much anything else.
Yeah. But I definitely, I have to say, I really enjoyed this issue, and it was the first one of this run so far that I was like, oh, maybe I will like this. Maybe this should exist.
Yeah, totally. So, he draws a hell of a Mothman.
That's right. Very true. And it was mostly careful kind of study of, you know, comic book mental hospital stuff, you know, Arkham stuff. Yeah, I thought it was a well done issue. And the flashbacks to the asylum that he was in before coming over. I would recommend this one. Doomsday Clock number 4 gets the thumbs up for me, not just because of the delicious pancakes on the front cover.
It does make me want pancakes.
They were like two. When is Pancake Tuesday? They were a month. They were a month too late for Pancake Tuesday.
Yeah.
But imagine if they lined it up, if DC had a pancake week, Pancake Tuesday.
Always pushing your Catholic agenda on this podcast just to I'm get just your pushing son into a
my
school.
Pancake agenda. Yeah. Always.
It's
one
literally
week
the
now.
Only Catholic thing I do. Because I'm like, it's Pancake Tuesday. Pancakes.
Yeah. I think I just like pancakes. They should just make Pancake Week in like October.
Why? Why
I don't know.
Is that better?
I just want to see all of my favorite DC heroes immortalized in a series of pancake variants.
Yes.
There's like a guy on Instagram who has like a pancake shop, and he just does like every character as a pancake.
What do you mean? Why?
I don't know, doesn't that interest you? Like what, like Squidward from some SpongeBob would look like as a pancake?
Is it shaped like him, or is he just drawn on the pancake?
Well, he's like one of those extremely gifted pancake artists who like expertly knows how to like swirl around the different colored batter,
right.
And then makes like a proper face. That's do you even eat that, or do you lacquer it and take it home?
Yeah, I'd want to keep it forever.
If someone made your face as a pancake, would you eat it?
Yes. It's the only way I eat pancakes.
All right. I'm glad we settled that. Yeah. The Terrifics. The Terrifics is a series that apparently spun out of Dark Knight's Metal. And when the first issue came out, I was like, have they just spoiled the end of Dark Knight's Metal? They hadn't. There is the tiniest thread.
There is no end to Dark
of,
Knight's Metal.
Yeah.
What happened?
It lives on forever.
They had a party.
Yeah, they wore suits. So the Terrifics, the Terrifics spun out because some of the suits they wore were terrific. And that's the only connection. So the Terrifics is a series through DC right now. It's written by Jeff Lemire with art by Ivan Reyes. And it is all about the team-up of Mr. Terrific, Plastic Man, Metamorpho, and Phantom Girl. It's, you know, everyone when it was announced, everyone was like, oh, this is clearly like an homage to Fantastic Four. Maybe this is Jeff Lemire telling a Fantastic Four story that he wasn't allowed to tell when he was at Marvel. After reading like the second issue of this, I think this is really boring.
Yeah, so far this is boring, which
I just
makes me sad.
I don't. It's so basically they're like the four of them are like in space where they discover Phantom Girl. So the three of them, and they also discover like this like almost massive Galactus figure who is dead when they find him seemingly, and then they end up having to escape from him because he wakes up, and then they return to Earth, and then they realize that they can't leave each other. They're kind of bonded together.
And Phantom Girl can't, like, unphase. She has to stay phased or she, like, starts exploding things.
Yeah, she has to stay intangible. So it still has the, like, you know, the possibility of it being a good... It has potential. It has the potential to be a good comic. But it just feels like just, like, long setup. That long, unexciting setup at this point.
And, like, sort of unnecessary, I feel.
But I'm going to keep reading, not just because I like Jeff Lemire, but because I like Ivan Reyes. Also, I like the characters. It's another case of I should like this, but I don't.
Yes, I'm willing to give it another couple of issues.
That sums up a lot of books that I read this week.
Yeah, I wasn't going to read this week.
But the next book I'm going to talk about is a case of I shouldn't like this, but I do.
Nice. Oh,
can you guess which
exactly
one it is?
What you're talking about.
This is another one that span out of the New Age of Heroes DC lineup. And it is written by Dan Abnett with art by John Romita Jr. The Silencer, issue number. Yeah, it's the most John Romita Jr. cover I've seen since every other cover he did for Mark Miller.
There's some hectic sausage fingers that man has.
Delicious looking sausage fingers. So this the Silencer is the name of a character who is new in the DC universe. She, however, has existed long enough to be old friends with Talia al Ghul in the League of Assassins. Her power is that she can create like cones of silence, but she's given up that life of danger because she now has a family and she wants to be a wife and mother, and and it's impossible to be both. But, like, even though, like, you know, this is hardly groundbreaking in any way, it's just a really, really solid, fun, page-turner action comic.
It sure is.
That, I think, is, like, John Romita Jr.'s, like, best art in so long. I mean, it's clearly him. If you're not a fan of him, you won't like this. But I think if you are someone that, you know, has been a fan but has seen, like, you know, some sloppier stuff that he's done or, you know... Maybe you sometimes like him, sometimes don't. I would take a guess that you would enjoy the art on this, because I certainly do.
Yeah, this is surprisingly fun.
It's like the last issue I thought was so fun with the ties to Talia or Al Ghul, and like the kind of, you know, anything that explores like old DC friendships and stuff like that, I think is really fun. But then it just has fun with this idea of like a society of professional criminals, mm-hmm. and the rules that they have in place and the technology they have in place. I'm just such a fan of this book. It's so bizarre. I wasn't expecting to like it at all.
Fun character.
She's a super fun character. Her power set's really, really cool. And yeah. It looks like
even the costume issue, which is like quite goofy, I think they pull off.
Yeah, totally. And then in the next issue, it looks like Deathstroke is coming after her.
And Jeremy Jr. draws a very hilarious, sassy, dickless Deathstroke.
dickless Deathstroke. Deathstroke's back, everybody, but his dick is gone somewhere else. Looking forward to the spin-off series, which fills in the gaps of what Deathstroke's dick was doing while he was taking on the Silencer.
Me too. Well,
would you want that comic to be called Deathstroke's Dick or just Dickstroke?
Dickstroke. Death Dick. Oh, you couldn't call it. Yeah, Death Dick. Death Dick.
But yeah, Silencer, like surprisingly really solid. I'm just like surprised by how much I like it.
Same.
And I watched this one be the first one they cancel.
Yeah, totally.
Although no, I reckon this is going to be one that survives. I think she's a cool character.
Actually a cool character. I think that she could like easily fit into the DC universe in a really nice way. It's kind of checkmatey. I think that's maybe why I like it.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if she like, you know, this series ends with her making a deal with the government, and then that she's someone that heroes can hire. I think that could be really fun.
Yeah.
Batman Detective Comics issue number 977 came out this week. Written by James Tynion IV, with art by a bunch of people that I will get to when I find their names eventually written somewhere in this book.
Nice.
I might start like getting a post-it note and writing the names and then putting it on the front. I'll never do that. Javier Fernandez, Eddie Barrows, and Eber Ferreira on this one, with colors by John Calise and Adriano Lucas. And this sees Tim Drake being given footage from his future, in which we recently saw the evil Tim Drake return from. And basically this kind of crafty little shit who was working with Batwoman's militant father has taken Tim Drake into his little high.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
...had out and shown him all of this footage that he stole from the future. So Tim can essentially... Mm-hmm. He even references the book from Back to the Future that Biff gets with all the sports results. The almanac. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And says, like, you know, this is your way to save the future from happening. I thought that was a really, really clever way to corrupt Tim Drake.
Yeah, totally. I like that shitty little character, Ulysses.
That little shit.
Whatever.
Mm. Ulysses, aka the little shit.
Yeah.
And then we see Batwing and the guy whose name starts with A.
Azrael.
Azrael and Batwoman basically working with her father. And they're going to start touring the world, bringing justice.
I like their team dynamic. I would quite like a book of just those guys.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what Detective Comics becomes, just those three guys.
Cool. I'm into it.
Because it looks like the regular Bat crew is kind of deteriorated to the point of no return, which is almost how every Bat team book ends.
It's true. And then we're getting like a Brother Eye. Oh, right, because Ulysses is controlling Brother Eye. Cool.
Yep.
Because I just read our Mac project. I was like, ooh.
Yep. We actually put out a bonus episode this week on our Patreon, which is you can find at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, in which Siobhan and I review a bunch of graphic novels and a bunch of long runs that we've recently completed, including a bunch of Greg Rucka DC comics from the best era of DC comics, which is the mid-2000s for us. That's our favorite era.
Yes.
Those include The OMAC Project and Checkmate. So head to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast if you want to support the show and get access to, I think it's like 12 bonus episodes, 10 bonus episodes. It's quite a lot. So go in there. You deserve it, dear listener.
Treat yourself.
And we deserve your money.
Yes.
So kill two birds with one stone and everyone will be happy. Final DC book that I read this week was The Demon Hell is Earth, issue 5 of 6, written by Andrew Constant with art by Brad Walker. And, pencils by Brad Walker. Inks by Andrew Hennessy and colors by Chris Sotomayor. This is a kind of like road trip through hell where Etrigan the demon is separated from his host Jason Blood, teams up with Merlin and Madame Xanadu to take on his demon father.
Belial.
And it is a extremely like fun and quippy kind of like high dark fantasy hell book. Which if you're in the mood for is a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. I enjoy this. I think Andrew Constant does a good job of making Etrigan not irritating, which is impressive.
Yeah, totally. Especially because this is the issue that had the most rhyming in it. The least plot, and the most rhyming. But the rhymes were great, and it looked, you know, he spent this building up towards the final issue, which is going to be a big showdown between all the characters and Etrigan's father. Who is an enormous, massive demon.
Drawn
very well by Brad Walker. Some great art in this book. Good choice.
Yeah, I like the series a lot. Good, silly
fun. We'll do an extensive look back at this when the series is finished in one more issue's time. Let's move over to Marvel.
Wait, hang on. I read two more DC books.
You're kidding me. What did you read?
I read issue 3 of Mystic U. Which I can't believe it's only been 3 issues. I feel like I've been reading this for 1 million years and not enjoying it for 1 million years.
This is like
I don't even
magic
really understand
school.
What happened in this. It's not that bad. The art's great. Sorry.
Who's it written by and drawn by?
Oh, yeah, cool. Any information. It is written by Elisa Quitney with art by Mike Norton and colours by Jordy Blair, which is why it looks great.
Yeah.
But it's sort of... This was a lot about, like, the teaching. Actually, you know what? I did enjoy this. Sorry. Convinced myself that I didn't like it, but as I am rereading it, it's pretty fun. It's like Teen Zatanna goes to college is the vibe. And it's...
Magic college.
Magic college. It's very, like, Buffy vibes. So there's a bit of a, like, freak of the week kind of thing. And there's been so... Like, there's so many of those, like, genre of shows now that we're all used to them like building up their little sort of gang of magical bros, and so it kind of is a little bit annoying, but it's also like a magical college where like Madame Xanadu is a teacher and a whole bunch of like DC magic bros are in it, so it's pretty good fun.
Yeah. Where are we left with the end of this issue?
What happened? They're really long issues too, and I don't think they have ads in them. Cause it's sort of like
that's why it feels like you've been reading it for 3 million years.
Yeah.
Are they prestige format too? Not quite.
No.
I don't miss opportunity to be the best form of Outer Comics.
I did a classic me thing and I didn't finish the issue, so I don't know what happens in the end.
No, we can review it next week too.
Great. I also read a Vertigo book. I read Motherlands.
Oh, fuck, I put this on my list, but I forgot to read it. That was fun. I like that series.
Yeah, it's cool. Written by Cy Spurrier with art by someone Stott. Here we go. Artist Rachel Stott, colors by Philippe Sobrero, letters by Simon Boland. So this is like the future bounty hunter mother and daughter road trip to kill their brother slash son. And it's good fun. It's like really lurid, over the top, crazy space shenanigans, all very hilariously like sexual. There's a bit where there's like a weird pleasure, like octopus room,
mm-hmm.
that the mom like buys her daughter a session to be like, you haven't gotten laid in ages, go in the suction room. And then she tricks some aliens from going in there and kills them with a big sort of fleshy dildo. It's a pretty hectic book. Yeah, some of the fight scenes don't quite read well for me. I would like to see more detail.
Suction scenes work well for you?
Yeah, they just skip through all the best bits. What's the point?
If you were given the option of eating a pancake that made of yourself or going into a suck room, what would you choose?
God, these are such terrible options. Anyway, at the end of this, they may or may not have killed the son slash brother, but you got to assume it's not him. Anyway, good fun.
Awesome.
Sorry, I ruined the ending for you.
Yeah, whatever. We do that every week. Marvel, right now, we're going to move over to Marvel. I've got a stack of Marvel books. I'm going to kick off with the 600th issue of Daredevil, written by Charles Soule. Yeah, Charles Soule, Ron Garney, Matt Miller, and Clayton Cowles on the main story, and then there's a backup by Christos Gage and some other artists. The backup is a really boring Foggy Nelson backup, which is just like him recalling his life and how unimportant he is. But the big kind of like is a big extra sized $6 issue of Daredevil. It's the finale of the Mayor Fisk plotline. Not quite. It's still going to continue. But basically, this sees Daredevil, Iron Fist, Misty Knight, Spider-Man, Echo, Moon Knight, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones team up to take down Mayor Fisk once and for all. But he leads them all into a trap, and all of those heroes except Daredevil get arrested. Daredevil goes to take Fisk on face to face, and then realizes that Fisk is just going to injure himself with a hammer and pretend that Daredevil was the one who did it so he can come at Daredevil with the full strength of the law.
It seems like a really weak move from Fisk.
Yeah, but then, even weaker, Fisk gets like attacked and collapses. He collapses after being hit by multiple arrows fired by the Hand, who just show up out of nowhere. And then, because Fisk is down, his deputy mayor is now the mayor, and guess who that is?
Bullseye.
Matt Murdock. Matt Murdock. So now Daredevil is the mayor of New York City. That sounds like it should have been the most insane, fun read. It was such a chore. I don't know why.
That sounds really boring and annoying.
Like, Charles Soule just doesn't have fun with this character. It's Daredevil played as the most dull, serious, law-abiding character in the Marvel Universe. And now he's the mayor.
Well, finally, some shit's going to get done around here.
So, yeah, I read through this going like, yep, this is definitely going to be the last Daredevil issue I read from Charles Soule's run. But that, you know, that final page of Matt Murdock is the mayor of New York City. I'm like, got to see how this pans out. So I'm going to continue reading.
I hope it's just like a whole issue about like potholes and graffiti
just potholes.
Well,
actually, every issue of this has been about graffiti, so that wouldn't be anything new. Yeah. But because that was so dry, the next book I read from my Marvel stack was a comic that I have kind of been overly critical of, and you're a big fan of it, of this run. And after reading like this very serious, somber Daredevil and moving straight to Moon Knight 193, I saw this book for the excellent series that it is, and how much, just like a great example of a writer having fun with the history of this character and then just making up his own insane rules for the character as well, and just one-upping every issue with insanity. Moon Knight is, of course, what I'm talking about, written by Max Bemis with art by Jason Burrows, inks by Guillermo Ortego, and colors by Matt Lopez. Like, where do we even begin with what the fuck is happening in this story? Of course, it's a Moon Knight book, so it's exploring the inner workings of the character of Moon Knight, his many voices and multiple personalities that make up his mind. And this has a great thing of, like, almost being like a... whenever we go inside his head, it's all of the different characters that make up his head on a stage, pretty much, talking to each other. And there's a great realization that, like, while... Moon Knight's alias? Like, the main alias? Mark Spector. While Mark Spector, like, calls on everyone from Khonshu to, like, the like, director to the taxi cab driver, all these guys that live in his head, that, like, you know, he calls on them to kind of access their talents and skills and power sets. But they realize that he has powers too, and that power is the power of crazy.
Yeah.
And we have this brilliant, like, series of panels of him just beating the shit out of his... the protagonist from this arc, and he's missing a tooth and he's half on fire and singed and fucked up, and it's just glorious, insane comic book storytelling.
And, like, so gorgeous. Like, Jason Burrows nails it, and the fight scenes, you follow, like, every single punch, like, you are so aware of exactly what is happening, and it looks crazy and gorgeous. It's so mental.
And he's good at drawing kids as well.
Yes, he is good at drawing kids. He absolutely is.
Kids that look like kids. Marvel need to lock Jason Burrows down.
Yeah. Yes. Get in a relationship with him. Put a ring on it. Definitely.
Put a ring on it, Marvel. Are you still enjoying this run as much as you have been?
Yeah, I really am. I think it's great. I think it's really, really silly, really good fun. As long as Jason Burrows sticks with it.
Well, he's not. Because next month is Ty Templeton. Who is great,
I like Ty
too.
Templeton, though.
Very, very different. And then the covers are now by Becky Cloonan. That'll be fun.
Cool.
Becky Cloonan does great covers. I think Max Bemis is doing great stuff on Moon Knight. And now I feel silly for being so critical of how silly it was getting, because it was...
good silly.
It was great silly. It was great comic book silliness.
Well, I'm glad comics
should be
silly.
Comics should be silly. Comic podcasts should be silly too, so I don't feel bad at all. Jessica Jones, issue number 18. It's Bendis's farewell to the character that he created during his 100 years at Marvel Comics. And as you know, he is coming to DC. Yep. And so he is saying farewell to all of his beloved characters. And this is the final issue of Jessica Jones before a new creative team takes over. Do we know who they are yet? We just know that she's returning. Jessica Jones will return. In fall 2018.
I hope it's a woman.
I think that's crazy enough. Just crazy enough to work. A woman writing a woman. I think we're ready for that. In 2018, we may be ready. This is... in the back matter, he just says that, like, you know, there are so many ways that he could have had this final issue with, you know, this character that he loves so much pan out, but he decided that he just wanted to give Jessica Jones one good day. And he actually... Apparently, this character, basically, it's like it's her solving this mystery, which is the estranged girlfriend of this like Z-list villain called the Armadillo, who apparently has showed up in many books during Bendis's long run at Marvel Comics. So this is also his farewell to the character, the Armadillo. Jessica Jones is just given the task of figuring out what the fuck's wrong with the Armadillo. And
it was pretty sweet.
It was pretty sweet in a very annoyingly Bendis way. Like, yes. there is like the fourth and fifth page of this comic
The same panel. And I was like, ugh.
The same panel six times, except each time the panel is repeated, it's slightly more zoomed in on one of the characters, and then there's about 10 word balloons surrounding her head with just insane amounts of dialogue. And I just like, if I was an artist working at DC, I would be like, yes, please. I would love some time off. Put me on a Bendis book so he can just tell me to repeat a panel 6 times.
Yeah, totally. It seems like a nice goodbye to the character.
Kind of, somewhat. I would have liked, like, you know, we got, even though he doesn't have as much history with the character that Bendis does with Jessica Jones, but we got David F. Walker's farewell to Luke Cage, in which he reads a bedtime story to his daughter, and that was way nicer than this. I would have loved to. Like, I get that, like, it's good to see her, you know, doing her job, being a detective, PI. But
that's all we ever see. We never see the other side of it.
I know. I've never seen evidence of her being a good mother. In fact, it's always like, you know, suggested that she isn't. But like, even if we see her being a terrible mother, but trying to be a good one, that would have been a nicer farewell. I'm not saying that the most important thing about Jessica Jones is that she is a mother, but we just never see that side of her. And when we do, it's like she's just in the background telling Luke Cage to come back to bed or something like that. Like, yeah. It would be good for someone to actually explore Jessica Jones
as on a day-to-day mothering level.
Yes, definitely.
As a mother.
As a mother.
More mum comics, please.
Definitely, please. So yeah, bye-bye Bendis, bye-bye Jessica Jones. I definitely reiterate Siobhan's statement that I hope a girl gets to write Jessica Jones next. Chelsea Kane, that'd be good. Bring her back.
That would be good. That would be great.
She already did like a little Kelly story Thompson. In a Civil War 2 spin-off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True.
I want Kelly Thompson to write young characters. I think she is great at nailing young characters' voices.
She did do a pretty good Jessica Jones, though, when she crossed over into Hawkeye.
That's true.
But yes, she is good with young people.
So now another Bendis week, another Bendis comic was... issue number 598 of the Invincible Iron Man, and the kind of tagline for this issue is "Where is Tony Stark?" No, sorry, "The Return of Tony Stark." That's like the tagline for the next issue. But I feel like that just sums up the entirety of what this run has been. Like, it's weirdly sabotaging of his own plot that this whole thing has been about Tony Stark's return. And we're like 10 issues into this run, and all we've seen Tony Stark do so far is be bald and crawl across the floor of a laboratory. And then, which would be fine, like, you know, okay, cool, do a Return of Tony Stark comic, but he's then shoved the... He used to have a comic for Doom as Iron Man and a comic for Riri Williams as Ironheart.
Mm-hmm.
But now both of their plots have been shoved together in this book, which is about Tony Stark eventually returning. And instead you just have these like really like slow meandering scenes with Doom and Riri just waiting for more information about when the fuck Tony Stark is going to return. It just feels really self-sabotaging to me.
It also sounds really boring.
It's really boring. It is really boring. It has excellent art by Stefano Caselli and Alex Maleev and Marte Gracia. But story-wise, it's just a really baffling choice for probably his most read book to say goodbye to. Whatever.
Weird.
So that is Invincible Iron Man. One last Marvel comic that I read that Siobhan didn't. Actually, who could say? There's probably 10 more of them coming up. Avengers No Surrender continued this week in issue 686 of the Avengers.
Part 12.
Hulk is really, really angry, but also able to talk. So he's like smart Hulk who can converse with Wonder Man. I think you would really like this because it's really, silly. And having Wonder Man as a main character, and while Hercules and Thor try and stop him. This is just like it's just a big silly comic, and the rumor is that this is all written by Jim Zub and Mark Waid and Al Ewing. Apparently, Al Ewing has written the bulk of this Hulk character, like this take on the Hulk, and it's like this is like kind of setting up his Hulk book, which is just going to be a straight up horror book featuring the Hulk as an unstoppable monster, which is really fun, and he does a great job of doing that here.
Cool.
Also,
well, I'm down.
You know how I've spoken in the past about being blocked, the Serious Issues Twitter account being blocked by Al Ewing?
Yes.
We thought it was because we made fun of his DJ name, DJ Christ. Actually, I learnt that many people in the comics world have been blocked by Al Ewing because he used a weird block bot. And it just like randomly, like it assumes that you align with somebody and just blocks you. So maybe because of the people we follow, it assumes we're like a Facebook troll or something like that, or a Twitter troll, sorry, and has just blocked us. So now we know which side of the Civil War II argument Al Ewing was on. He was on the use the inhuman to predict the powers, to predict the crimes before they happen.
Yeah, I can't agree with you on that. I'm sorry, Al Ewing.
Unblock us, Al Ewing, please. Black Panther 171. Siobhan, did you read it?
I did read it.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, Leonard Kirk, and Laura Martin for an action-packed fight between Black Panther and Ulysses Claw and their
I miss the separate politics. Parties.
Yeah, but I mean, it does show that Coates can write a great action comic as well.
Yeah, totally.
And it looks like we're going to get a... Yeah, I mean, I definitely would prefer the comics... Sorry, the politics side to the kind of supernatural folklore side that we're getting through this.
Mm.
Do you like that stuff?
Yeah, I do. You hate folklore. yeah, I don't mind that stuff. I sort of find it like... I think reading it the way that we do is probably not showing it off to best advantage. I think that it will be worth reading again in trade.
Sure. Let's do that one day.
Yeah.
40 years from now, we'll meet up and re-talk and talk about this series once again. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, issue number 29, came out this week, written by Brandon Montclair with Natasha Bustos and Tamara Bonvian. Before we review this issue, I thought we should point out that Brandon Montclair has recently announced that he is doing a graphic novel series with Erica Henderson, who has recently left her work as artist on the Squirrel Girl comic, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. And that is very exciting news to me.
Yep, same. I'm into it. Good team.
Siobhan, it's only 9 o'clock. You're acting like it's like 3 a.m.
I'm so tired. This is my bedtime.
Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. This series has been without Devil Dinosaur for quite a few issues now. And instead, we have Lunella, the smartest girl in the Marvel Universe, uniting with The Thing and the Human Torch. And they're trying to restart Fantastic Four, and they need a fourth hero to join them. And we knew it was coming, and the final page of this issue, spoilers, but whatever, you knew it was coming, is Devil Dinosaur returning through a portal, but wearing a Fantastic Four uniform, which Lunella was smart enough to make in dinosaur size.
It's great. That's all.
That was... That was great, because I think like this issue itself was like, man, if I was a kid, this would go completely over my head. There's like a super Skrull who has like harnessed the power of a dark dimension and brought a crazy. It's very Kirby, basically.
True.
This feels like very decidedly not all ages friendly. Besides the message behind it, so. I think it's good to see Devil Dinosaur return to dumb down the story for idiots like me and children. I got a walnut brain. But a really good issue.
Yeah, I like it.
Walnut's probably my like third least favorite nut. Brazil nuts, easily my least favorite. That's the worst
easily.
Nut.
Easily. They're the worst nut.
Fuck a Brazil nut. Lockjaw number 2, written by... Daniel Kibblesmith with pencils by Carlos Villa, inks by Roberto Poggi, and colors by Chris O'Halloran. This is a team-up book between the Inhumans teleporting dog Lockjaw and D-list ex-villain come superhero D-Man, who is in a, like a, you know, having a midlife crisis He's, you know, come out of a relationship and he's let himself go, Lockjaw teleports him to the Savage Land, where he is surrounded by a very sexy, what's his name again? Guy from the Savage Land. Is it Kazar?
Yeah, someone, Daniel, who listens to the podcast, told us how to pronounce it, but I already forgot. Sorry, Daniel.
Your work, your hard work is wasted on idiots like us with walnut brains. Siobhan's got a Brazil nut brain.
Oh, that's mean.
It's the worst thing I've ever said to you.
He's not that sexy in the interiors. The Chris Anker cover.
No, but the cover. Ooh,
man. Oh, boy.
He's got like a fucking 14-pack.
I find this book weird. I don't understand it, and I don't know if I like it. I read it.
It wasn't what I was expecting from the book, which is I just like, you know, a lot of like big fat dog teleporting around and licking things.
Yeah, that's all I want. And spider hands about to show up.
Yeah, I don't need that. That's for sure.
I don't need
But I guess
hand.
Maybe he's like gonna like team up with Lockjaw and like a bunch of other animals, which that could be fun. Licking man's you.
Lockjaw and the pet Avengers maybe?
Yeah, that could be great. But
could be.
Yeah, but I like this. Yet. I like the redemption story of D-Man. I just don't know if having it in a Lockjaw comic was a great move.
Yeah, don't fucking sell me a Lockjaw comic and then it turns out to be a D-Man comic. That's not what I want.
I'm still enjoying it. I just noticed that on the front it says with special guest Abzar. No, wait, I mean Kazar. That's pretty great. Pretty funny.
Is it great?
Did you read any other Marvel comics this week?
All right, Deadpool.
Oh, you read Deadpool. Fuck.
The Despicable
How did
Deadpool.
I miss Deadpool?
I don't know.
What number Gary is Dunning. That one?
What now?
What number is it?
Number 297.
Thank you so much. Oh, shit. And this is like, was this him against the world?
It's him against a boat.
A boat? Wow.
Yeah. So this is written by Gary Duggan with pencils by Mike Hawthorne, inks by Terry Pallett, and colors by Jordi Belair. And on this, there's like a crime boat run by Tombstone with all of like New York villains on it doing gambling. And Deadpool shows up and is like, I've got a crazy bomb and I'm going to take all the money. But then he was blah, 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 blah. It's pretty good.
Stiltman. That doesn't seem like it follows the story at all.
No, it does. He needs money for reasons.
Ah, cool.
Oh, you know what? It's actually pretty good. Okay, would you like to know the reason that he needs the money?
Yes, please.
He needs $20 million because he is putting a hit out on himself.
Oh, that's right. Cool.
So now all of the villains in the Marvel Universe have, like, on a sweet supervillain app, they get the notification that they can kill Deadpool and they can get money for it. Cool. That's Taskmaster awesome. Bullseye.
Does it all go down on this boat, or is that what's going to happen next?
No, the boat was just the way to get the money.
Great.
The boat is now
crime
gone.
Crime boat. Sounds fun.
R.I.P.
The last Marvel book I read was a book that I would said I would stop reading, but the Javier Rodriguez cover was too good to resist, and the Wilfredo Torres interiors were also too good to resist. This is Legion issue number 3, written by Peter Milligan.
It was
which
a good
is,
cover.
It's an incredible cover, featuring David Haller, a.k.a. Legion, hiring a celebrity psychologist to fix his head once and for all. And so you have him, you know, waiting impatiently in a hospital while she lies in a coma and fights his inner demons. It's, like, passable as a comic. But the art is great, and for that reason, I'm just going to see where it goes, because I skim the boring bits and enjoy the art. And that's an okay to read comics when a comic book shop gives them to you sometimes.
Absolutely. I did a very similar thing with X-Men Blue issue 24, written by Colin Bunn, with art by Jorge Molina, colors by Matt Miller and J. David Ramos. And this is like the weirdest X-Men team ever. It's like barely even a team anymore. So it's they're led by Magneto, and it's that alternate universe young, sexy Wolverine, Jimmy, plus Bloodstorm, Jimmy Hudson, and Bloodstorm. And then Oh, it's quite complicated, but it's all sort of, I'm really struggling to explain what happened in this, because there's a lot of threats.
Mutations happen, the species of mutants, they're threatened.
Mother Vine. Yes.
And there's complicated relationship triangles.
Yes.
And then this panel happens
in the end that has a bunch of men in clothes and then women in underpants. Yay. It's Emma Frost and Miss Sinister. Good.
Miss Sinister?
Yes. Like Mr. Sinister, but in a corset and a miniskirt.
But for ladies.
But for ladies. Finally, a Sinister for me.
What number X-Men Blue is that?
24.
Thank you so much.
I did. Job of explaining what happened in it. But I don't really understand.
Fine. Are you enjoying it still?
Kind of.
Cool.
In a weird, like, in spite of myself those way.
Those are our Marvel reviews for the week. And now we have... I've got three Image books. Have you got three Image books?
I do.
Great. Saga, Chapter 50. Written by Brian K. Vaughan with art by Fiona Staples. They did it. They made it to chapter 50, and how do they begin celebrating their 50th issue? With a big 4-page female ejaculation scene.
Yay. Congratulations, guys.
I want to give a shout out to Marco's core strength for being able to support his wife in that position while submerged in water.
This is very impressive. He was in the army.
Pretty hilarious and goofy opening scene.
Yeah, they just love it. They just love, like, ah, immediately they get you with a, like, hilarious sex scene.
They loved it, yeah.
Open with a sex scene, end with a potential death. That's the Saga, like, formula.
Yep, totally. And having the word ejaculate face being used as a term of endearment. As far as explosive moments in a 50th issue goes, that was kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
for the rest of it, it is kind of setting things up for future enormous problems. As we see our main characters kind of tossing up options of I'm trying to talk about it without spoiling too much, but do our main characters take an out from their current lives and live safely after revealing their story to the world, or do they continue doing what they've been doing these last 50 chapters? And then we learn more about the killers in their midst,
mm-hmm.
and including one character that's been there since the beginning, having just his story is just the most profound bummer of Saga. Nothing good has happened to the Will.
No, he is having a tough time.
The back matter of this
issue continues to be such a good comic.
It's so solid. Even when, like, you know, it is just set up for future things. There's beautiful moments between characters that haven't had beautiful moments before, or, you know, further beautiful moments. And then, you know, truly disturbing things headed to the hero's way. And then the back matter is the winners of the Saga cosplay competition, and it's just the as good as back matter gets. Like, diehard Saga fans dressing up as super obscure characters from a comic book. It's just so fucking great.
So fun. Such a good universe that they've created.
I love everyone that dresses up as, like, the robot characters. Those are my favorite.
They look so.
There's something
amazing.
So great as seeing, like, someone so well dressed with a computer head.
So good. I love it.
But my favorite Image book this week was a book that, look, lackluster isn't quite the word, but I had spent the last few issues since its return kind of wondering if I still liked it as much as I used to. And the book is Black Magic, written by Greg Rucka with art by Nicholas Scott. We got issue number 11 this week, and I think this was my favorite of the entire run so far.
What a great issue.
It was a brilliant issue where the stakes felt really high, and I thought we were about to lose one, if not more, main characters during this issue. And even though it felt like a really, really like climactic action comic. It was quite a quiet, talky comic. Where the threats were enormous, and we learnt the true power of the main character. So fucking cool. This is a book about a witch who is also a police officer. If you have not ever heard of it before, this was just probably my favorite issue of the week, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm forcing Siobhan to pick a favorite issue of each week so we can take photos of ourselves and put them on Twitter.
Good.
So more people that like certain comics share the image of us holding up the comics they like. I don't know. It's a crazy idea. Maybe it'll work. @serious_issues you should also follow the King's Comics Instagram page too, because Siobhan made all the King stuff. Every week she makes the King stuff pose as a different comic book cover. And it's always amusing and good.
It is always. It is always amusing to force them to do it.
Black Magic number 11. That was probably my favorite comic of the week.
Nicola's so good.
She's so great. She's so fucking good on art. And Rucker really at a point now in the story where we know who the main characters are, and now we're learning more and more about them, which is always the best part of a run.
Absolutely.
What was the last Image book you read this week?
The Beef. I caught up on
Oh, you picked it up. Amazing. Yeah. I didn't think that this issue was anywhere near as good as the first one.
It made me very anxious about what I eat. But I really like the aesthetics of him as a superhero.
So this is a book written by Richard Starkings and Tyler Shanline, with art by Shaky Kane, who I've previously described as a cross between Michael Allred and Gilbert.
Hernandez.
What's his last name? Hernandez. This basically, the Beef is about a guy who works in a abattoir, kills cows for the local burger chain, which is called The Beef. And he eats hamburgers every single day. And the hormones in the hamburgers have altered his physicality. So he becomes like this big, gross, inside-out, muscly man when he's angry.
And then he pukes and he stops.
Yeah.
It's great.
So it's like part weird action comic, but also this is like a big commentary on how shit it is being a Mexican immigrant in 21st century America.
And absolutely, but also how shit it is being a farmer, and how shit like genetically modified foods are, and how shit their farming industry is.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first issue because I thought it balanced that all, whereas I thought it was a bit more heavy-handed on that latter part of it in this issue. But I still enjoy this, and I'm definitely going to see this one out to the end, because I think it's a fun, in spite of being a heavy read, there's something quite fun and silly about it.
Yeah, while also absolutely having
a pretty strong social conscience. So that's The Beef. There's only two issues out so far. It's a very unique and cool Image book. You should pick it up if you are in the market for one of those. Sean, we're almost at the end. We've got four more. I've got four books here. How many you got?
One.
Fantastic. Let's do your number one first.
All right. Rugrats, issue 6. Did you read it?
I read some of it. It's written by Box Brown with art by Ilaria Catalani and colors by Eleonora Bruni. Look, I think it's a really good Rugrats comic, but I don't think I need to read many really good Rugrats comics in my life. And so the five issues I've read so far, that'll do.
I think I probably have like more nostalgia for the series than you, so I'm still quite enjoying it. But it's not like essential reading goodness. And they've turned Grandpa into like a really hectic conspiracy theorist. But that's quite funny.
It's funny, but he's like the foil to, or the foil hatted foil to like every single story that they've had now, like the last.
Yeah.
It's just, he has some crackpot theory and the babies get run, like, it's all about aliens in this one. I don't know. I was like, this is fine.
It's cute though.
Yeah. It's cute. And it was a new artist on this issue. Or is it the same
one? She did a really good job.
Yeah.
Cute babies.
There is a Derek Charm variant cover that I really enjoyed seeing.
Lovely.
But I don't own. I read another Boom comic this week, Abbott, issue number 3.
Which
I must have forgotten to pick up. This is the excellent kind of mystery book set in 70s Detroit, written by Saladin Ahmed, with art by Sammy Cavella and colors by Jason Wordy. It's very, very different to Saladin Ahmed's Black Bolt book, as you can imagine. Not only are there no big crazy alien characters, but it's a grounded book save for a supernatural element. So we have a reporter, a black reporter, a woman as well. Those are the three things that she is. And she is also being kind of hunted by this supernatural force, and has links to all the crimes that we've seen in the book thus far. And we learn more and more about it as each issue continues. And she also, has a lot of mirroring politics and what it's like to be a black female reporter in 70s Detroit. Spoiler alert, it fucking sucks.
Seems terrible.
And it gets really bad for her at the end of this issue. It's a pretty unique and cool series. Abbott.
Yeah, I'm sad. I missed that.
Pick it up. I need to pick up Deadpool and Motherlands. So you got to pick up Abbott.
Okay.
I stuck with reading the Anthony Bourdain led anthology series Hungry Ghosts, which comes out through Karen Berger's Berger Books through Dark Horse. He co-writes this book with Joel Rose, and it has art in this book. We have two stories, and they're like kind of like food based horror stories. The art in the first one, which is called Deep, is by Sebastian Cabrol, and it's about essentially toxic masculinity in the kitchen, and all the different hierarchy of chefs being horrible to the chefs below them, and all of the one chef in particular is quite aggressive and awful to what's it called when you are doing a when you're like a first year apprentice. Yep. And like he likes to shove his finger down the butt cracks of his apprentices. Then there's a monster element to it, which is like this like kind of like sudden page reveal. It's kind of dumb and silly. And the
weird
second story is called Boil in the Belly. And the art on this short story is by Paul Pope. And it was a goddamn joy to see Paul Pope doing a freaky horror story about a boy who gets a boil on his stomach, and the boil demands to be fed. And so his mother has to cook meals for this boil on her son's stomach and feed it. She's like cutting up steak and vegetables and feeding it to the hole in her son's stomach.
God, it's sounds so cool.
It's really cool. It involves a doctor shoving his gloved hand inside the son's butt and pulling out an enormous monster. And as you can imagine, seeing Paul Pope draw that is
that's
one of the reasons I read comics. So
wow. That's something.
Is the jury out on Paul Pope? Is he a bad dude or is he just a...
I don't know, man. He's a good artist.
He's a good artist.
He might be a bad dude.
Maybe you can look at him having to draw a monster being pulled out of a butthole as his punishment for being a bad dude, maybe. Maybe that's a celebration he doesn't deserve. Final book that I read this week is my ongoing desire to force myself to read Kiss comics as an adult.
Weird, man.
They keep making them and I keep reading them. This is issue 2 of Kiss Army of Darkness, which is the mashup of Army of Darkness with the rock band Kiss, written by Chad Bowers, Chris Sims, art by Rory Coleman. I quite liked the first issue, which is why I stuck around for the second. But the second delves into the kind of like high dark fantasy vibe of the Army of Darkness movies instead of the boomstick theatrics that I liked about those movies. And it's like Kiss literally leading an army. I don't know. It's whatever. It's not my cup of tea, so I will not be continuing with this. But hey, I read 2 issues of a Kiss comic. I think that's more issues of a Kiss comic than I've read since this podcast started. But also,
a thing worth celebrating?
I've read 10 issues of Kiss comics, I think, since I started this podcast. So happy birthday to me. Thanks, Kiss. I was made for loving Kiss comics. Or for tolerating them. Well, tolerating one issue of them. It's not a very good chorus. So that is the end of this episode of Serious Issues. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully our tired voices didn't make you also tired. But
yeah.
Hey, it's sorry, fucking Jesus' fault.
Blame Jesus.
And for 4-day weekends, they're great for some families, but for people who podcast on Mondays, not the best.
It's a nightmare, guys. We're exhausted.
So if you want to find us online, you can find us at facebook.com/group/serious issues podcast, which is our Facebook group. We can talk about comics and being tired 24 hours a day. or you can find us on Twitter at @serious_issues if you want to support the podcast and gain access to that bonus episode featuring all kinds of much more awake, vivid comic book conversations. You can go to patreon.com/serious issues podcast. And there are many ways for you to get in touch with us and let us know what you think about comics and the podcast. We love hearing from all our listeners. So get in touch. Thank you so much for listening. And
thanks, guys.
Happy end of Easter, everybody. I hope you all get some beautiful rest.
Happy end of Easter.
Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want, it's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.